We've been talking about proving the will of God here. Let me ask you this. Have you ever given God anything? I mean, have we given God our time? Have we given God our money? Have we given Him our strength, our talents? If God says, I want you to write down the top three things that you gave me, what would you list? I think back on that stuff, you know. I think about all the work I did out at Central Baptist Church and at Bible Baptist Church and witnessing and passing out tracts and working in the ministry and teaching Sunday school classes and all this other stuff. You get thinking about all the things you've done for God. What would you put at the top of the list? What would the top three things be? That's a pretty interesting question, isn't it? Look at 1 Chronicles 29:10-15. Wherefore David blessed the Lord before all the congregation, and David said, Blessed be thou, Lord God of Israel, our Father, forever and ever. Thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all that is in the heaven and in the earth is thine. Thine is the kingdom, O Lord, and thou art exalted as head above all. Both riches and honor come of thee, and thou reignest over all. And in thine hand is power and might, and in thy hand it is to make great and to give strength unto all. Now therefore, our God, we thank thee and praise thy glorious name. But who am I, and what is my people, that we should be able to offer so willingly after this sort? Now listen. For all things come of thee, and of thine own have we given thee. You say, what's the point? What can you do for God? You can give Him some stuff. The trouble is, because His ways are not our ways, we don't think like He thinks. So immediately, when we think of what we gave God or what we've given God in the past, the things we put on our list are quite a bit different. For example, were any of these at the top of your list? Glory, honor, power, praise, love, appreciation, thanksgiving, honesty, obedience. Were any of those on your list at all? You see, He didn't create you and make you so that you could give Him stuff. He created you for His praise and His glory. He created you to desire Him. He created you to love Him. Those are the things that He's given you the ability to give Him. You say, what's that about? Well, we've been looking at the will of God, specifically how to prove the will of God. And we've worked our way up to where we're looking at doing the acceptable will of God. And these things are proven by the fruit of the Spirit. And I don't know if you haven't experienced it or if you have experienced it. I have, especially in the last 3 years. But I can look back on my life. There were times in my life when I experienced the fruit of the Spirit without actually really realizing that's what was going on. I'd get sensations of pure joy. I'd get tears in my eyes thinking about God and what He's done for me. I mean, sometimes it'd be the sacrifice on the cross. Other times it'd be the promises He's made about heaven. Other times it would be just singing a song about God. You start thinking about how great God is and how magnificent He is, and you just kind of get overwhelmed with some of that stuff. And next thing you know, you got tears coming out your eyes, you got goosebumps all over you, you know, and nothing else exists in the world for those few seconds. It's just God, and it's wonderful. Well, what do you think that is? Come on. That is the fruit of the Spirit. You are experiencing love, joy, peace, gentleness, meekness, faith, temperance, long-suffering. You're getting all that stuff right there at the same time. It's not, well, you get this one now, and then if you do something else, then you'll get this one over here. You get all that stuff all at one time. You get a sense of peace and comfort about you. At the same time, you've got joy. You feel love for God. And those things come anytime you're doing what God desires for you to do. And when you don't have those things, it's because you're not working and thinking in that realm. I mean, if you're frustrated in life, if you're having difficulty living day to day, if you've got problems that overwhelm you, and the things that you design and the things you figure out in your mind that are going to work out for your best, they end up falling apart. If those kind of things are driving you nuts, it's because your ways are not God's ways. And you haven't moved into the realm of doing the things for God that He desires. You say, well, can we do that in everything? He says, whatsoever you do in word or deed, do all to the glory of God. Whoso offereth praise glorifieth me. You get into that realm of where you're actually glorifying God, you experience the fruit of the Spirit. You just simply do. Would you do that 24/7? No, I don't. I wish I could. How come? Because He says, we have these gifts in an earthen vessel. And as long as this thing is in a contaminated pot, so to speak, and I got the old man dealing with me, my thoughts are still about myself. Whenever my thoughts are on him, I'm doing fine. Whenever my thoughts are on myself, I'm frustrated. I mean, stop and think about it. When are you actually totally satisfied in the flesh? I mean, at the happiest point you can be in the flesh, wouldn't you like to weigh a little bit less? Wouldn't you still like to have a little bit more money? Or wouldn't you like to have these problems solved in your life that still exist? You can't totally and completely satisfy this thing. First of all, it's dying. Second of all, the longer you live, the worse it gets. And if that weren't enough, you got all the rest of the other people that look like you, acting like you, frustrating your life even more. That thing is going to be with you, unfortunately. Until when? Until you drop dead, you know, and then absent from the body, present with the Lord. To be with Christ is far better. We don't feel those things. Why don't we feel them? We don't love God enough. We don't have enough faith, do we? How do you get more faith? How do you get more love for God? How do you do that? I believe you can get more love from God by appreciating Him more. How do you appreciate Him more? Know more about Him. You see a stranger on the street, you appreciate him? No. One time I sat down on the airplane flying from California out here by this guy. I'm sitting right next to him. And I didn't know who he was, just an old guy, just another old guy. Got talking to him, come to find out he designed the F-16. We started talking about all that stuff, and he started telling me what all went into that thing. I started appreciating him more. That was one of the best trips I had on an airplane. Why? Because I like to know how things work. And that's what he was enjoying telling me, was how he made that thing. It was great. Well, that's about God. The more you know about God, the more you appreciate Him. The reason Christians don't appreciate God is because they don't know hardly anything about Him. You know what they think? They think God's all about passing out tracts. They think God's all about you reading His Bible. They think God's all about showing up in church. That's what they think. But that's not it at all. Like I said, your list of what you've given God and what anybody else would list. And we've been in this stuff for 3 years. And I guarantee a bunch of your attention did not go to I gave Him praise and I'm giving Him honor and I'm giving Him power over my life. I want to give Him glory. Those weren't at the top of your list. You start thinking about things you actually did. You think about the things that cost you something and the labor and the effort you put forth. Just like Cain. This is the best I got, God. I said, that's not what I want. And that's what He's been trying to show us about Himself. And the hard part is, we, as the natural man, don't gravitate to that. This thing is not like, oh, well, I understand it now. Old Stephen's back there preaching. During the time he's preaching, this guy was a miracle worker. You go back and read Acts, you'll find out that guy had power, and he was an absolute miracle worker. Wouldn't you think somebody like that, everybody would just fall in love with him if he could work miracles? So they start accusing him of all kinds of stuff. So in defense, he stands up and he gives this big speech, you know, preaches this sermon about how Israel did this and how Israel did that. And they thought they'd understand, but they understood not. And they understood not, and they understood not, and they understood not. We are without understanding. We know not as we ought to know. His ways are not our ways. We're not going to gravitate to where God says it one time and we got it. Because it's contrary to our nature. So what did they do to Stephen finally? They killed him. Why? Because he was doing exactly what God wanted him to do. They killed him. Now that's mankind. You see Christians standing up for him, say, you're not going to kill him. We're going to attack you back. Oh, they just backed off. Let him kill him. Does that make sense to you? Wouldn't you think God would protect him a little more than that? I told you, my ways are not your ways. Old Stephen says, man, I see him standing at the Father's right hand. Oh, we've got to really get bigger rocks, people. That's the way they think. Don't you understand and realize from what I just said that when God begins to work in almost any church, you end up instantly with opposition? From what? From the natural man. Because we're not going to do what God does. God does stuff totally different than we do. So when we get talking about the will of God, God says, look, not only are you guys not smart enough to figure this thing out, you'll come to the conclusion that this must be right because of all these reasons. He said, I don't have any because. This is what I like, and I'm going to prove it by giving you the fruit of the Spirit. It's not going to be because of anything. The proof is not going to be because. The proof is going to be you're going to feel this joy. You're going to feel and experience this love. And you're going to be changed from glory to glory. And for you to think like I think, you're going to have to change a lot. And it ain't going to happen overnight. It may take quite a few years. I said, Lord, I sure wish this thing had happened a little bit faster. He said, I have many things to say unto you, but right now you can't bear it. And we probably can't. Now look, we're living in the last days, aren't we? So if the Lord comes back, how do you want to go out? You want to go out just plain old Laodicean Christian, or you want to go out changed closer and closer into His image, into His glory? Is that what you really want? If that's what you want, you're going to have to put forth effort on your part. And the effort comes from you first in trying to do what God desires for you to do, and then the change comes from God to change you little by little to where you're not the same as you used to be. Anyway, let's get back into the will of God, more specifically in God's acceptable will, which is to receive with pleasure. And He says, I'm giving you an opportunity to prove that what you're doing matches my desires, because your ways are not my ways. Therefore, the things that you would choose to do for me and the things that you would think I would want are probably not the same as the things that I actually want. And so what you need to do is you have to have some way to prove it. Well, you're going to prove it by the doctrine in the church? You're going to prove it by your preacher? You're going to prove it by the teacher? Well, if that's the case, then you're going to have them up there at the judgment to testify in your defense. But He didn't provide for that. He said, so then every one of us should give account of himself to God. So what did God do? He made each one of us accountable individually, without our spouses, without our parents, without our friends, without our preachers, individually, all by ourselves, in front of Him. So when you stand in front of God, you'll be given account of yourself. And as such, He says, now I've given you ways to prove what I like and what I don't like, and the proof is the fruit of the Spirit. If the fruit of the Spirit is connected to the things that you're doing, then you're going to know it, you're going to sense it, and it'll be positive proof that those are the things that I desire. Let's look over in 2 Corinthians 5. 2 Corinthians 5. Now, we've looked at several of these things of the acceptable will of God. This is another little old passage here that's part of the acceptable will of God. It says here in the first five verses, for we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, an house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed upon with our house which is from heaven. If so be that being clothed, we shall not be found naked. Now you start thinking about these things. The things that we think about have been perverted and polluted to the point we can't even think like God thinks. You start reading stuff about being naked. Adam and Eve were naked, right? Isaiah ran around preaching naked, right? He talks about guys showing up there in front of God naked, possibly. Now, we don't have to worry about that. We really don't. But can you imagine how embarrassing it'd be to be in front of a holy God? You're standing there naked. Adam and Eve ran off and hid right after they ate the fruit. There's going to be a bunch of people really embarrassed. Anyway, it says, if so, then being clothed, we shall not be found naked. For we that are in this tabernacle do groan, being burdened, not for that we would be unclothed, but clothed upon, that mortality might be swallowed up in life. Now, you do have God's righteousness, okay? But this thing is also connected into a few other things, because he starts tying in the nasty now and now with the sweet by and by. So how does he do that? Verse 5. Now he that wrought for us the selfsame thing is God, who hath also given unto us the earnest of the Spirit. Now we've been talking about this fruit of the Spirit. You get over there and you read earnest of the Spirit. What's this earnest mean? My brother's name's Ernest, William Ernest. I always thought earnest was something you could count on, you know, maybe dependable or something like that. You start looking it up. No, it's a totally different thing. It's earnest or earnestly or sincerely. The earnest of the Spirit is what he's given us. Now, what is the earnest of the Spirit? Now, you get over to Noah Webster's 1828. Earnest is defined as first fruits, that which is in advance and gives promise of something to come. Now, you're not going to find this in Daniel Webster's. How come? Daniel Webster wasn't saved. He didn't have the same amount of light that his brother had. Here's what Noah Webster's got. The Christian's peace of mind in this life is an earnest of future peace and happiness. Hence, earnest money, a deposit, or down payment is the pledge of a full payment still to come. Now that's what the earnest of the Spirit is. And this earnest of the Spirit has to do with a small sample of what we have waiting for us on the other side. It's just a small sample of it. He's telling us if we give him what he desires out of love for him, he'll give us the fruit of the Spirit as an earnest of our future. How do you know that's exactly like that? Because if you have the fruit of the Spirit, if you experience the fruit of the Spirit in your service for the Lord, if your efforts for the Lord, in your desires for God, if you experience those things, he says, that is proof positive that the things that you're doing, I'm receiving with pleasure. And when you get here and your work is tried of what sort it is, it'll be the right sort. You don't have to wait for a bad surprise. You can prove it right here. And you don't have to depend upon somebody else to prove it to you. I'll do it personally by my Spirit. Now that's what he's telling you. Our greatest joy or spiritual pleasure here is only a small down payment of future joy and pleasure. I mean, when do you have the greatest sensation of pure pleasure in your life? You say, I've had a lot of fun and I've enjoyed a lot of things. But I'll tell you, for me, I can't speak for you, but for me, the greatest pleasure I've ever experienced in my life is when God is really, really close. And the closer he gets, the more intense it becomes. To the point where your brain can't even function on anything else. The only thing that's going on is just focused on him. What he's done for you, maybe. Maybe his greatness. Maybe his power. Maybe his desires. Just his pure magnificence. What he's capable of. You start thinking in those terms and it gets to a point where it's like, Lord, I'm overwhelmed. I heard a preacher, I don't know, I think it was maybe Billy Sunday or somebody. He said, Lord got on him and he went and got himself in a motel room because it was just really strong. And finally he started praying and said, Lord, shut it off. You're going to kill a good preacher. I heard that right after I got saved. And I said, God, if that ever happens to me, you're going to have to kill me because I ain't saying turn it off. I can't think of a better way to die. And that one prayer meeting, and I wish there was a lot more, but that one prayer meeting where the Lord got so real to me, that thought came through my mind and I said, no, Lord, don't stop. That's the greatest moment in my entire life right there. What is that? My greatest joy is only an earnest of future pleasure. Because right now, it's by faith and it's a glass darkly. When I see him face to face, there's going to be a difference. Fanny Crosby, blind, writing that stuff, when I shall see him face to face. She understood. Yeah, man. It's going to be like that. It's going to be like that. The only difference between that and the real thing is everybody's going to be yelling at once. If you're not experiencing this now, I mean, if you don't ever get these sensations as the fruit of the Spirit now, I hate to say it this way, but the simple fact is you're not giving him what he desires. You're giving him what you think he wants. you're picking this stuff out. You're saying, okay, God, here, I'm doing this for you and I'm doing that for you. That's the case. You're going to end up in heaven and you're going to expect something to happen. And the fire is going to try your works and the whole thing is just going to disappear. And you'll go, what happened? And he'll say, I told you to study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman needed not to be ashamed. You're kind of ashamed, aren't you? Well, yeah, God. Too bad you wasted your life. But man, look at all the stuff I did for you, God. Yeah. Didn't count. How come? Because it wasn't on my list. Wrong sort. Now, some people say, well, I don't think so. I don't think that's right. Fine, have it your way. He said, your ways are not my ways, saith the Lord. Go ahead and do it your way instead of his. Now, this stuff's a little bit like Philippians. Look at 6-8. From this, earnest of the Spirit, he moves right into another realm. Therefore, we are always confident, knowing that whilst we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord, for we walk by faith and not by sight. We are confident, I say, and willing rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. Now that ties right back over into where Paul got up there to the third heaven, and it changed his desires permanently. Philippians 1:21-24. For me to live is Christ and to die is gain, but if I live in the flesh, this is the fruit of my labor. Yet what I choose, I wot not. For I am in a strait betwixt the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to abide with you is more needful for you. Now, if you ever had a chance to get up there and see the third heaven, I guarantee you, you'd have a desire to depart. The reason we don't have a desire to depart that's real strong. And when I say that, I have to speak for myself. My wife's got a totally different attitude toward this stuff. How come? Well, maybe she got a lot closer there than I did. She'll hear crying right now. Why? She wants to go. Why don't we want to go? Verse 7 back over there in Corinthians, for we walk by faith and not by sight. O ye of little faith. Now you think, oh, well, Paul had all this advanced revelation. Paul didn't have the advanced revelation all by himself. He had more stuff than that going on. Like what? Well, he gets up there and he sees the third heaven. And he comes back down here. And he gets up so impressed, he goes right back into the city where the guys just left him that had stoned him, hoping for a second shot at it. Lord says, not this time. You say, I don't really think that. Well, you think anything you want. Would you go right back into the city where the people just stoned you to death? You think he healed up before he went back in? They leave him out there for dead. He gets back up, all beat to pieces, and bloody lumps all over him. Goes right back in where those guys are at. Does that make sense to you? Doesn't make any sense to me, except now I got a real desire to depart. The Lord says, I told ya, you got to go back. You think you're going to play games with me? Oh, no. You say, well, he had all of this special stuff going on. Oh, really? What about us? You think Paul ever read the book of Revelation? What's going on back then? Paul had some advanced revelation, didn't he? So do we. It's right here. We got more than he had. What else? You got the fruit of the Spirit just like he had. You got the same way to prove things just like he's explaining to us. Question is, what are we doing with it? That's a pretty good question. What are we doing with what God's shown us? Not enough, I can tell you that. Anyway, back over here, look at these last verses here. For we walk by faith, not by sight. We are confident, I say, and willing rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. Wherefore we labor, that whether present or absent, we may be accepted of him. What's he tying in there? He's tying in the things you do. He's talking about your labors. He's saying, look, if the fruit of the Spirit's in it, you're doing the right stuff. If the fruit of the Spirit is not there, I don't care what it looks like. I don't like it. Now look, you got all of these things that are in the fruit of the Spirit. Now you tell me how many times you experience those things sitting in this church singing the praises of your Creator. Not enough. Why not? Why not? Is it because the song is wrong? How come it blessed you this time and not this time? What's the difference? It's the wrong sort. What do you mean the wrong sort? Not of duty. God loveth a cheerful giver, more blessed to give than to receive, not of necessity or grudgingly. Unfortunately, we've got to the point where it's not cold. It's not, oh, I have to do it. Oh, I wish I didn't have to go. Man, I have to be here and sing these dumb songs. I hate these songs. I hate all four verses. I hate all three. I like them out of that other book. Well, at least you're a cold Christian. Unfortunately, most of us come in here and we do this stuff and we're lukewarm. We don't feel anything. It's not hot. It's not cold. It's just duty. It's just do it again, do it again, do it again, do it again. You want to know why? Because you're not seeking. You're not doing what He told you to do. He said, you want to start doing what I tell you to do? Start seeking. Start looking for stuff in here. Start looking for the fruit of the Spirit. Start looking for the things that my desires are set on. And then set your affections where mine are. And things will begin to change from glory to glory. Let's close in prayer.